Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2014. Lecture 1, delivered on January 14, 2014. The title of this lecture is Introduction to Finance.
Today, Introduction to Finance. A couple of things while we are in our first aspects of the course that I want to cover with you. Just some general information. Sometimes I'm going to say something that is different from what the book says. Who's right? Say it. That's exactly right. No, it's not often. When I give you a citation, when I give you a quote, when I give you a definition, use it. Don't go to Wikipedia or Infopedia or Investopedia or another info porn site. I can promise you that you will get it wrong, and I will mark you as such on an exam or a quiz if you try to use a definition from one of those sites. And yeah, Wikipedia is a trash site. You are professionals, and I am going to treat you as such, and I'm going to give you how it is that we consider things in our field, in our discipline. So the first thing that I'm going to cover with you is, what is finance? The book says, well, finance is a combination of accounting and economics. Mother of God, no. Finance is not anything to do with accounting. We sometimes have to use accounting figures, but really, that's just because sometimes we just don't have any other information. Accounting is a different field. Now, you're going to hear me make fun of accountants, but I do respect them. They make a lot more money than most finance people. But at the same time, they live boring lives and they never have sex. So, there you are. Take your choice. Okay, now, this takes us to another subject. Do you like sex?
Yeah.
Bro, man card issued. Good. What else do you like?
Sports.
Sports? What else?
Beer.
Beer? What else?
Sleep.
Okay, we're talking a healthy human being here. Look, we are people, we're animals. We want more of everything. More is preferred to less. More of life, more of health, more of butt, more of food, good food, more of clean air, clean water, more of experience and happiness. More is better than less. I give you a choice between a job at $32,000 and a job at $60,000. Now, you get to choose. One of the jobs will go to this fine, upstanding young stud, and one of them will go to you. Do you want the $60,000 a year job or the $32,000 a year job?
60.
You greedy bastard. You're going to leave him behind. That's exactly right. You'll invite them over once in a while. But you see, that's just it. We want more. And if that is at the expense of someone else, well, that's just how it's going to be. We are not pleasant people in that regard. We have to start with the basic assumption that the world works in terms of greed. And that is the subject of economics. Finance is a subdiscipline of economics. Economics is a study of how scarce resources are allocated among competing end uses. And we study the scarce resources of the capital world, money, materials like metals and stuff like that, human capital. We are in the business of studying the scarcity that drives the markets to do what they do. And if we are going to talk economics, we are going to talk about people being rational. They are going to do what is best for themselves no matter what, unless something stops them. You are a bread maker. You make bread. Now, you're the only bread maker in the whole area. You can charge whatever you want because there's no other bread makers. You can charge people so much that they don't have money for other things. And what's even worse than that, you see, you can charge that and you don't care how you make your bread. You can be sloppy with the flour. You know, something fell on the floor. You can hire your lazy-ass brother here who sits in the basement playing World of Warcraft and eating Cheetos. Who cares? I can charge whatever I want for my bread. But you see, there's something about human nature. It's greed. Have you ever seen a person that just didn't deserve all the money he had? I've seen some of the guys who drive around here in sports cars. They need to be beaten up. Get the keys taken away from them. I need that car. You see, if he's making all that money, sooner or later, one of you is going to come in and say, you know what? I could do the same thing he's doing, but I could do it more cheaply because I wouldn't waste resources. I wouldn't spill flour. I would not hire that lazy ass Breaking Bad co-star brother. Okay, you see? Someone's going to do that eventually. You're going to do that. You see, all you're going to do is use the resources that exist more efficiently. And therefore, you can charge a lower price because your costs are not as high. And you're not doing this because you love people and you want them to have nutritious bread and all of that. You're doing that because you're a greedy son of a bitch. This is static efficiency. Static efficiency. Using existing resources with existing technologies more efficiently. You're doing the same process he's doing. You're just using the resources more efficiently. There is a natural tendency to do it because you can take his business away from him if you do that. But then something else begins to happen over time. Because, you see, there's got to be other ways to make bread. Other ways to arrange the factors of production and press them into service on resources to create output. That's called dynamic efficiency when you shift the technology. Dynamic efficiency. Reducing resource use through technological innovation. Now, let me make a point here. You have been inundated with this idea that the word technology means computers in your home, computers in the classroom, computers in your ass. Technology means nothing like that whatsoever. It is a hubris of our time that we think technology is all about blips and bleeps and lights and pretty things that go bump in the night. Technology is merely the way you use your factors of production. Land, labor, physical capital, and equity. So here we go. You decide, I can make bread at a cheaper price by just using more machines and less labor. Or maybe less labor and more machines. Maybe moving things around so that my production cycle is faster. That's dynamic efficiency. That brings us to an even more efficient use of resources. Now, you're not doing this because you love Mother Gaia and you want to save the world by using only green energy and all that. You did it because you were a greedy son of a bitch. You want to drive him into bankruptcy, put him out of business, and then when they are so poor, they'll have to send their kids to Illinois State University. Oh, Mother of God, I'm podcasting this. Okay. Oh, it's just Jack. You like? No, seriously, it's still got some stuff in it from when I sneezed. Here we go. But do you understand what I'm talking about here? Is that none of these people were in business for their fellow man. None of them were. We say it in our mission statements in business, we are here to provide quality products to our customers so they can live productive lives and their children will not be molested. Bullshit. We are in business to make money. And if that means driving people out of business so that we can get ours, it's going to happen. Now, here's the last part of it, though. You are now the apex predator in the capitalist chain. Are you going to put up a sign above your bread store? My bread tastes like ass. Yeah, a mom tries to take her kid. No, mommy, I don't want that bread. That bread tastes like ass. Oh, shut up. There are kids starving in China. They'd love to have an ass sandwich right about now. No, your bread can't taste like ass. Yeah, okay, there's niche marketing and all of that in some places in Chicago. But look, you can't make ass bread. It has to, because your customers are not going to eat bread that makes their breath smell like butt. You see, there's a limit on the greed. It's called the market discipline. The market will discipline you. You keep killing your customers, well, eventually they'll say, well, this sucks. But that, all that means is that the markets can take care of themselves to a large extent. We don't need mommy government or mommy environmentalists or mommy this or that telling us what to do. Give us our private property and let us run our businesses. Laissez-faire. It's a French term from long ago. Leave us alone. Let us do what we do best. Now, that doesn't mean there's no role for government when there's cheating and when there's nasty stuff going on. We got to stop it. And even the founder of economics, Adam Smith, would have said, we got to have someone that stops the predators. Unfortunately, we don't anymore. Hence, we have Google, Apple, Microsoft, Bank of America, because those giants have been coddled by what should have been the protectors of the free and efficient markets. But you see, at the bottom, though, the point is that unlike what you might have heard in a religious ceremony or in some philosophical textbook, greed is good. Greed drives us. It drives us to do better than we did before. It drives us to be the best we can, and it makes us use our resources, our private property, much more efficiently than any other system. If it all belongs to everyone, what do I care? But if it belongs to me, then I'm going to see if I can make money off it and do it as efficiently as I can. Now, you're going to hear this. This is an underlying subtext of everything that I do here. The finance is a world of predators, of people who are there to make money, to take. And they want to take more than they have to give. That's just how we do it. That's how the financial markets work. No one is in this for everybody's benefit. If you assume that, well, you're going to get your ass eaten in this, in my world. I ran a brokerage house for a while. A penny stock house. I did a lot of business consulting over the years. I quit doing it because the world is so vicious. I almost got killed or went to prison, and either one of those wasn't too pleasant a prospect. But understand that this is what drives our world, is this greed, this wanting more of everything, more of life, more of sex, more of money, more of the toys and the fun things. And we'll do whatever we have to get those things. And given the rules that are set down by our society, by our culture, and by our government, and by our religious, overlying religious beliefs sometimes, I suppose. But the thing is here that you have any money? Do you have $100 you could lend me?
Not today.
The hell with you. Woman, you have $100. Don't look at me. I know you do. You got that shit-eating grin on your face. Yeah, I'm going to party this weekend. Okay, let's just make this abstract because I keep forgetting you guys are students. You po. Okay. the thing here is, so that in the world, resources are not distributed evenly. They're just not. Some people have more of some things. Some countries have more of some things. Some countries and people have less of things. And so there is a good reason to interact with each other, to find ways that we can trade what we don't have, get what we don't have, and use what we do have to get it. And in the world of finance, we use two terms, and they're actually more complicated than you might think. There are these surplus economic units. Surplus economic units. They have more money and capital, and I'll use the word money in a little bit too loose a way, but okay, think of it, a surplus economic unit has an excess of money. Now, a deficit economic unit, excuse me, that was Denny's. A deficit economic unit has a deficit. It has not enough money. And again, I'm using money a little too loosely here for this, but yeah, there you go. We'll get to money here in a minute. But the thing is that this is not as simple as it might seem. You could be a deficit economic unit in one time frame, but in another time frame, you might be a surplus economic unit. We find people who don't have a lot of cash in their pockets, but they've got a lot of money in retirement accounts or in some kind of illiquid instrument. So what we're talking about is kind of a timing sort of thing here. I have $20, you need $20. Now, you might have a lot of money in a bank account, but you can't get to it right now. Okay, so in this case, you would be the deficit economic unit, and I would be the surplus economic unit. Finance is about bringing those two together. We might be able to work out a deal so that I can provide to you in exchange for some promise to me. Okay, that's called financial intermediation, facilitating the flow of money. You use the word funds there. Don't use money. Use the word funds. Facilitating the flow of funds between surplus economic units and deficit economic units. Facilitating the flow of funds between surplus economic units and deficit economic units. Now, for God's sake, I'm going to ask you this some way on a quiz or a test. Don't say financial institutions are the ones who do this. No, they are one that can do it, but it could work out. You might know both of us, and you could come to me and say, dude, really? You calling me dude? Okay, dude C. Look, my friend here needs some money. In that case, you would be the facilitator, the financial intermediary. So I could say, all right, you give it to him, make sure he gets you the contract, the IOU, that I get my money back with a little interest, okay? So it doesn't have to be a traditional financial institution, and that's one of the things, the book seems to promote this myth that, oh, we have to have banks, and we have to have all these things that make sure that people can get money and lend money and all that kind of thing. Not really. Financial intermediation can occur without financial institutions. So if you ever put financial institutions in an answer that has to do with financial intermediation, I will eat your ass. As one famous show used to say, that's a paddling. Okay? Don't. But you see, it's not quite that simple because sometimes it might not work out. I might want my money back in a week, but you can't get it back to me for a month. So the financial intermediation has to take into account timing. Are both of the sides of the agreement going to want to do it in the same time frame? that also, well, it turns out he needs $1,000. I don't have $1,000. Okay, so that means that the next part of it would be the amount, what we call the level. So there will be the timing, and there will be the level. And then there's one other. Well, what are you going to do with the money? Well, I'm going to go to Vegas and bet. Oh, my ass, you are not with my money. Risk is the third one. So the financial intermediation has to take into account three independent, well, actually, they kind of work together in some ways. Three factors: level, timing, and risk. So financial intermediation is the matching of surplus economic units with deficit economic units, taking into account level, timing, and risk. And that's really what the world of finance is all about, is moving funds back and forth. And again, remember that there are times when you might be a deficit economic unit with respect to some things, but a surplus economic unit with respect to other things. So you got to understand that it's a dynamic that sometimes you can live in both worlds at the same time. And finance is about how we do that and how we efficiently move the funds and get them to where they're needed and move them from where they're needed. Now, here's the next part of the problem, though. Let's say I was going to lend you $100. I've got $100 in my pocket. Madam, why am I going to lend him $100 when I could keep $100? What's that all about? Why would I ever want to let go of my money?
Because he needs it.
Oh, I don't care about him. He can die. As a matter of fact, I tried to run him down. Do you remember I said die, mofo? I don't care if he needs it.
Are you going to get interest
from him? Well, that's just it, you see. I care if he needs it enough to make it worth my while to give it to him. See, because that's all that matters. I don't care if he needs it. I don't care if you're dying. Do you have something I can use? I kind of like that little mini-ass computer. It's very cute. Well, you hold that up to your ear when you have to answer a phone call. Yeah, this is dog. But yeah, that's just the thing. Interest is the issue. I have to be rewarded. And interest rates represent a combination of factors. But at the bottom of it, I have to be rewarded for giving up immediate consumption. At the heart of any interest rate, and there are a lot of things that add to an interest rate, but the bottom line of an interest rate is that it must reward me for giving up consumption now. That's why there is such a thing as an interest rate. Is because people aren't going to... Do you like cheeseburgers? Oh, man, you're not one of those cheeseburger kinds of ladies. But that's okay. You see, I do. And in order for me to give up my noms... Noms equals cheeseburgers in my case. Okay, in order for me to give up my noms, I have to be given something. So if you want my money, you're going to have to induce me to let you have it for a while. And the only way that's going to happen is if you make it better for me to lend you the money than to go out and have my cheeseburger. You see, that's all interest rates are. They're a natural part of being greedy. I'm not going to give you something unless you've got something in return. Oh, well, I give to charities, man. Well, yeah, you do, because you get something out of it. It makes you feel better. It makes you happy. You are getting something out of it. You never give away just for no reason whatsoever. Now, here's where it gets even worse. One night, you have lived a good life. You've always done right by people. You've sacrificed everything so that other people can have more. You gave up good jobs so that you could feed the poor. And you care for many animals and things like that, and you take in strays. And one night in your late years, in the dark of the night, you're lying there in bed and you open your eyes and there's a glow coming down from heaven. And you hear angels sing, Hosanna. And Jesus comes walking up to you. I'm Jesus. My son, you have lived a good life. You have sacrificed everything for the good of the world and for people around you. I'm so proud of you. And now for your reward. You're going to hell! Ha ha! There wasn't anything. You know, you can do whatever you want. You're still going to hell because you're ugly. And this place stinks because you got too many stray cats in here. And then I back away and the glow disappears. And then Satan comes. Let's go. Tonight we dine in hell. Or McDonald's, whichever you want. Do you understand? If we saw no reward whatsoever, it was just the dark abyss, McDonald's, we wouldn't be good at all. We want something in return. Now, does this sound mean? Am I an asshole? Yes. But this is how we have to think about the world around us, is that we are going to have to give something to get something. We're going to have to seek a reward, or we're not going to give it. No one's going to give you a benefit for free. Except your parents, and they're just suckers. But that's what the bottom line of an interest rate is. Now, I want to get to a very important matter here. Business is about making money. Let me clarify that the word profit is not really all that meaningful to us. That's an accounting term. Accounting, really, you're going to see in the next few minutes why we can't think about accounting concepts when we're doing finance. Profit is an accounting term. What we care about, and I'll get into this much more detail as the class goes along, we care about cash flow. Cash flow, the real money that, give you an idea, this year I run a professional landscape photography company. I'm a professional landscape photographer when I'm not a professor. This year I will have a profit. It won't be anything spectacular, but I'll tell you, my cash flow was so negative. I mean, it's like I ran out of red ink on my printer doing my financials. You can be profitable and have negative cash flow. And what does that mean? I could be out of business if I don't get that thing situation cleared up real fast. In fact, interestingly enough, over the past few years, we used to hear these business professionals, I'd have them speak to my finance students, and they always talk about profit. We're all about profit. Now, they have knocked it off, and they're getting real, and they're talking about cash flow. We're about cash flow. We're about cash flow. Profit or no profit, what we care about is how much money is coming in. You can lose money and have a very, you can have a negative profit, but if you're, and still have a very good positive cash flow. That's fine. And I mean, you're going to have these stupid idiots on the financial news network saying, well, they had a terrible loss last year, so I would recommend that we sell, that you sell this stock. Don't listen to them. Look at the cash flow. It's not as easy to see. You have to do some calculations. Turns out that in a lot of cases, these companies are doing damn fine. That profit that's negative, well, that's just because they are playing games with their numbers, and that's easy enough to do. But now let's get down to it. In finance and economics, we look at the words cost differently from the way the average person does, from the way other business disciplines do. But most of them understand what we're talking about, and they come to us to talk to when costs come up. But part of the journey that I'm taking you on here, and this has been going on all your college career, but it begins to get to have some really serious teeth here, is that the way people, your average ordinary people on the news and all that, use terms isn't the right way. We let them be ignorant and stupid But we have to know how to do it right, because we're the ones who are going to lead. And we can let this let people be as stupid as they want, but we have to make sure that we are not. Cost is one of those things. Cost in accounting is a receipt, and then you put down what you spent and you put it onto your financial statements. It is money that's come out of your pocket. Well, that's all well and good, but there are a couple of problems with that that make it kind of useless to us. The first is that the most important cost is not a cost that you will ever see with your eyes. The money will not come out of your pocket. And it is the dominant cost in all of business. In your lives, it is the largest cost of all. You pay tuition to come to this school. But you know what? You know what I see right here? I see an ass in a chair. You are here instead of out there working. You could easily get a job at $10, in your case, $7 an hour. Well, I don't want to. I want to be here because I love you, Professor C. Bullshit. Don't blow smoke up my ass and tell me you're having a barbecue behind me in my honor. You are investing in the future. But nevertheless, you are wasting money. It's not money out of your pocket. It's money that did not come into your pocket. That's called opportunity cost. Opportunity cost is the cost of the best foregone alternative. Sir, have you ever taken a shit?
Yes.
Good. You know what? That was money that you didn't earn. Well, God, crap, man. No, I'm not saying you don't, but it's still a cost. Have you ever slept?
Yep.
That's money out of your pocket. Well, I've got it. What do you mean? People have to sleep. There's no question about that. But it's money out of your pocket. You don't get your best wage rate when you're sleeping, when you're playing World of Warcraft, when you're surfing for pornography. No, I never do that. My ass, you don't. HereDoggy.com. Try it. And after that, granny tranny. I told you these were weird people. You're giving up something every time you do something else. And we see it in behavior. For example, if you're a loser, you don't work, you don't have a job, of course you're going to do things that get you into trouble. If you're a high school teenager, you can't make a huge salary, so of course you're going to spend more time online on Facebook and playing online games and all that kind of stuff and posing for naked pictures in your case, which I saw on Facebook, and those are nasty, man. Really, nothing. No, never mind. You see, the opportunity cost drives our decision making. In fact, when you go to, have you ever gone to like Six Flags and you see all the people standing in line? You know, a line 2 hours long to go on a ride that'll make you hurl and make your mud fly out? Yeah. You see rich people standing in that line? No, you see rednecks and hillbillies and losers. In other words, people from Decatur. I swear to God, I've got to stop that. Last semester, some kid, my mom's from Decatur. Yeah, I know. I saw her at the truck stop parking lot. Here we go. Shut up. Okay. But you see, we are always being driven by cost. What are we giving up? If you're making a lot of money, you're going to be that awful person who's always working, who never cares about his kids, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Sure you are, because money, your time becomes more valuable to you. But when you're not making a lot of money, oh, hell, what's the difference whether I work or play? And that's one of the things you hear these people who trash the poor. Oh, they're all lazy and blah, blah, blah. What are their opportunities for making money? Yeah, they're going to go out and get a $35 an hour job? No. Let's try a little interesting exercise here. If you know this town, and I'm sure you've been all over this town looking at the cultural highlights of it or not, you'll see that there are different kinds of grocery stores, lots of them in this town. You have everything from the low end, like Walmart. Aldi's. I hate Aldi's. They make you pay for your cart, put a deposit down, and they throw your food on the floor in boxes. Let's stick with Walmart. And or you can go to a high-end store like Schnucks or Fresh Market. Pretty much the same stuff. But if you go to Schnucks, it's ridiculously higher priced. Well, why would there ever be a store that would have higher prices? Didn't you just say a while ago, that we go for the lowest cost and all that? Well, not exactly, because let's try it. Schnucks is a high-end store. Walmart's a low-end store. Let's talk about going to Walmart. First, you have to find parking. You're going to park out probably in another county. And then you're going to try to get into the store, and you're going to almost be run over by some redneck cracker hillbilly who's got a truck that says, "My wife, yes, my dog, maybe, my gun, never." And then you're going to walk into the store, and you're going to hear someone say, "Hi, welcome to Walmart." You're going to look at, oh, God, they're hiring midgets for greeters now. Damn. You're going to walk down the aisles, and there are going to be these people, this big woman sitting in the middle of the aisle. "Honey, what do you want for dinner? Go away, you cow." You're going to walk all over until you find your food or die of starvation. And then you're going to walk up to the front and you're going to stand in a line that's a long, long line. And sure enough, in front of you is going to be a cart full of snot-nosed kids, and there's going to be a kid in there with a finger up his nose looking at you. And up at the front of the line, Granny's using an ATM card for the first time in her life. "Well, that was six times, and it still isn't. What do I do? Do I push these buttons?" "Hurry up, Granny. You're old. You're going to die. Go home. Enjoy your last years of your life." You go to Schnucks. Prices are high enough to keep that kind of riffraff out. So you see, now you make $10 an hour. You make $50 an hour. It takes 30 minutes more, let's say, to get the same stuff at Walmart as it does at Schnucks. So in other words, for you, the opportunity cost of Walmart is $10 an hour for an extra half an hour of aggravation. That's $5. But for you, what's the cost of that half hour? $25. So in other words, you would pay as much as $20 more at Schnucks for the same stuff that he's buying at Walmart just to save yourself the aggravation. So we can separate people by their wealth, by their money, by their income, by their opportunity cost. You ever go to a concert? You see these long lines of people, most of them tweaked out of their minds and all that kind of stuff. Then young people standing there waiting for their tickets, waiting 3 hours, making fools of themselves and all that kind of stuff. Well, of course they will, because they don't make a lot of money. Rich people aren't going to stand in those lines. As a matter of fact, at Disney, did you know that you can pay a very large fee and then you get to the front of lines? That's how it works. When I was a consultant, I traveled with very wealthy people. They just paid us to go to the fronts of the thrill rides. It was cool. But it was worth it to them so that we didn't have to stand in those lines with all the losers. That's how serious the opportunity cost concept is. It's driving a lot of our decision making. Now let me pin this down a little bit more specifically. Woman, we get to know you. I get to know you. You're really a bright student, 4.0. You go into your senior year, a couple of professors, we work together, and we make sure that you get a great job at State Barn, $60,000 a year. And that last time I see you is coming in the down the aisle in the processional at the graduation. I'm one of the professors who sits there in the black robes, and we look at all of you. You are so unworthy of this degree and all that. It's fun to scowl like that, but then we start, "Oh, God, I'm going away." But you're walking down, and I'm so proud of you. $60,000 a year job, the sky's the limit for you. You're headed to the big times at State Barn. And that's the last time I see you for a couple of years. Then on a snowy day in a January, 2 years down the road, you come into my office. Hi, Professor C. Oh, my God. I haven't seen you in two. Oh, my. You put on weight. Oh, damn. Well, at least that acne cleared up. You know, ma'am. You're doing well at State Barn by now. You've probably gotten a couple of promotions. You're making good money and all that. Oh, no, Professor C. I left the graduation ceremony, and I was supposed to report for training over at State Barn. And you know what I said? FTS. Fancy that scenario? No. I said, I don't want to be that. I want to be my own business person. So I, instead of going to State Barn, I opened my own donut shop. You what? Yes. And I just got back my first full year's financials, and I made a profit of $20,000. What do you think of me, Professor C? And you know what I say to you? You dumbass. Are you on crack? And you start blubbering. What? I said, I want you to go and burn down that donut shop right now. Oh, for God's sake, bring me the donuts. Let's not get radical here. Bring me the donuts and then burn down that shop. Why? I made a profit. Isn't that what business is all about? You lost $40,000. Do you understand that? You lost $40,000. Because you gave up 60 to make 20? Really? So in other words, what you think, what accounting calls a profit, we call a cost. Because you could have done something else. And anyone who invests money can do something else with that money. So any investment is actually a cost. And so in our world, equity, the actual one of the factors of production, the one that provides either the sweat or the capital investment, that's a cost of the operation. So in order for you to make a profit to me, you would have to have gone above $60,000 on the donut shop. And that's pretty hard to do unless you're really selling some good donuts. Now, Dunkin' Donuts, they've got this red velvet donut that's really to die for, but try to stay on point with the lecture here, okay? You understand the point, though, is that in our world, accounting profit is a cost. I mean, you see these, it happens all the time. A company will report a profit, $16 million profit. The stock will go down. And you'll have these talking heads on the news giving all kinds of idiotic reasons. No, you dumbasses. $16 million was a profit, but that was not enough to cover the risk in this investment. So the stock market punished that stock. It gave it an ass beating. Now let's get us to the next point here. I'm going to have to find... Woman, we're going to go over to the College of Business. I'll show you how to get up on the roof, and I'm going to give you a dollar to jump off the roof of the College of Business. You ready? Let's go.
Not a chance.
What? It's a good dollar. It's a real dollar. It kind of smells like it was in someone's ass pocket, but, you know, here you go. Let's go. Come on. What? Didn't I say greed is good, more is preferred to less? Here's more, a dollar. What's wrong? What's going on here? Are you saying there's a risk involved in that? Lady, you're young. You'll bounce. Don't point head down. Because if you point head down and hit your head, you know what's going to happen? For the rest of your life, you're going to say, go Cubs. Oh, easy. See, that's just the thing, though, is that there is risk involved. You see, if I offered you $250,000, you might be willing to do it, $500,000, you know, because, I mean, you could then pay for some repairs to yourself and all that. But you see, we take risk, and if we are going to bear greater risk, we're going to expect a higher return. That's the rock bottom first principle of finance. the greater the risk, the greater the expected return. The greater the risk, the greater the expected return. And I say expected there because there is no guarantee in this life. You will die someday. I know you will. It could be tomorrow. But I know you're going to die.
It's very morbid.
I know, right? And when you die, you're going to bitch and fuss, and finally you'll shut up so we can go and, you know, go to the restaurant and grieve you. But at the same time, you don't know when that could be. It could be in 80 years. But you could just walk right out here, walk out on the College Avenue, and a train could hit you. Ding, 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 ding. And you could be that dead there. Bring the spatula. You see, risk is in everything we do. And the more risk we have to take, the more we're going to expect out of it. You would not be here if you were going to get a $16,000 a year job with your degree. You're bearing a risk. You're putting money forward, and you're going to come out of here in so much debt, your ass will never be out of it. Oh. But I thank you for the salary. But you see, you are taking a risk for a higher expected return. If you thought, if you had any inkling that you'd make nothing more than McDonald's wages, you wouldn't do this. You're expecting a higher return for doing this. And it's the same in business. Everything we do, we are going to bear risk. And the more risk we take on, the only reason we would do it is if we expect to get something out of it. You see. And some people are very, and understand this, the world has a tapestry of risk preferences. Some people, some institutions, some governments, you know, they have higher risk tolerance. Some have much lower risk tolerance. We also, in finance, we know that a lot of times people don't really assess their risk preference very well. What they say is most decidedly not how we see them acting. So, for example, one great thing that we know in a lot of situations is young people say, well, I'm kind of a risk taker. Well, actually, young people are very averse to risk. Most of them are. That's what we do in marketing. We make them feel like they're wild and crazy, breaking all the rules, taking all the risks, and then we scare the shit out of them by saying, you don't want to be alone in the crowd. You don't want to be made fun of. You're afraid of taking risks, aren't you? See, we do that to people. We know what you really want. But we also know that there are some people who really are high-powered risk takers. Have you ever, I don't know, have any of you ever had a friend who was just a crazy-ass mofo? I mean, I've run into those a few times, and, you know, why are we doing this? And you look over, and there's the devil sitting there. My God, we're out running a state highway patrolman? Things like that. Yeah, you have some really high, scary risk takers, and we see a lot of those in finance. We also, to an extent, see that in entrepreneurial activity, too, the people who start their own businesses. I like to say I'm very risk averse, and if you looked at me and saw the way I live, you'd think, yeah, you are risk averse, but I start businesses and get my ass kicked over and over again. Right now, the state of Illinois is actually threatening to seize my business because I owe them -$9. I overpaid, and they've got a robot computer that's hunting me down, threatening me. Yeah, the risks are there. So entrepreneurs tend to have a higher level of risk. Some kinds of currency traders and some people who get into certain types of businesses have a higher level of risk tolerance. And a lot of times you go into situations and you misassess the risk too. So it looks like people are higher risk takers than they actually are. See that a lot when you're in the military. You know, you go in, you go through getting your ass yelled at in basic, and then you think you got a job and suddenly you find out people are shooting at you. What the hell is that all about? You know? But so sometimes we see misassessment of risk and we think, oh, well, those are risk takers. No, they just didn't know what was going on, what they were walking into. But, okay, so the greater the risk, the greater the expected return. And I couple that with that that thing that I just told you about the opportunity cost. And then there's one more that I want to cover very quickly here. Again, we go to this scenario where we have someone has graduated. You graduated, you got a 4 point. You were a real high-powered, what's your major?
Insurance.
Mother of God. Okay, but you had a great job, and then suddenly you decide, I don't want to do this. So you decided instead that you were going to go into running your own gas station. A little building in the parking lot of Walmart in Toledo. That's what you wanted to do. You changed your name to Ed so you could wear a shirt that said Ed. You bought a pair of pants to show your crack when you bend over. And you opened your gas station. And this was just what you wanted to do with your life. You felt like this was what you should do. So on one fine morning, there you are sitting at your gas station. The Cocaline truck comes in to deliver your load of gasoline. Now, it's $3 a gallon. You get 20,000 gallons. You mark it up 25 cents to $3.25. And then, you wave bye to the Cocaline driver. And you go back in and you squat down on your stool to watch your little black and white TV. And there is, and you have on Fox News, and what happened while I was out there? They're on your little TV screen. There are pictures of bombs being dropped. And there's a picture of something that looks like an American aircraft carrier that's sinking. And oh my God, there's a mushroom cloud. What happened? And then on the news stream ticker below, Israel attacks Iran's nuclear production facilities. Iran retaliates, sinking an American aircraft carrier with a sunburned missile in the Persian Gulf. United States declares war on Iran. Iran mines the Strait of Hormuz. Two supertankers already have hit mines and are sinking, leaking hundreds of thousands of gallons of oil a minute. By the time that driver gets to the next station, he's charging $12 a gallon for his gasoline. So there along the way, you see your competitor's signs popping, $12.25. You got gas at $3. You got $3.25. What are you going to do? You greedy son of a bitch. You got the gas so cheap. Why are you going to bring it up to $12.25? What the heck? I mean, shouldn't he charge $3.25? That's what he got it at. His customers love him. He wouldn't screw his customers like that. Oh, yeah, he would. Because all that matters is replacement cost. If he tries to do $3.25, he doesn't have the money to buy his next load of gasoline. Historical cost means nothing. All that matters is your replacement cost. What you expect it to be. The world is not about the past. The past has been eaten. It's gone. All that matters is what is going to happen. And in his case, if he goes $3.25 a gallon, that gas price isn't going to go down. And it's not going to drop itself. So what's going to happen is he would be out of business. You know, if you charge $3.25, all those customers who love you, they're going to come right to your station, wipe you out. And you know what's going to happen after they've wiped you out and you're out of business because you can't buy another load? They're just going to go down the road to your competitors. Because as it turns out, as little as you care about them, they care just as little about you. That's the reality of it. Replacement cost, not historical cost, not accounting cost, what it's going to cost to keep you in business. What it's going to cost to keep you working that donut shop. What it's going to cost for you to be here instead of out there working right now. That's what the world of finance is all about. We don't care what the accounting numbers are. We don't care what the price of a product is. What we care about is what it's going to take for us to go to the next level. I sell my pictures, my photographs at art shows around the Midwest in the spring, summer, and early fall. Now, the cost of the materials for those is about $40 for a beautiful professional frame print that is just to die for. So what should I charge for it?
$75.
No.
$400.
You're closer, but the answer is whatever I can get. You see, the only thing about the cost is I've got to sell it above my cost, my opportunity cost plus my direct cost. Otherwise, I'm out of business. But from there, in the reality of business, we charge what the market will bear. If I can find people who will buy my stuff for $400, damn straight. And that's why down here they'd be cheaper than up in Chicago, where they'll pay more. But you see, that's the reality of the business world. And that's coming from someone who's run businesses, most of them into the ground. But that's another story entirely. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.